Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news, episode number 227 for June 10th, 2019. If you have not had a chance to look at today's report yet, we are going to be discussing number 298, which you should be seeing on your screen right now while I'm talking. And you can also get your own copy of the report by going to timingresearch.com/reports, and you can get access to either the PDF version, which is the one I'm showing right now, or the web version. And we are broadcasting live on YouTube at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, but you can also listen to the audio-only podcast version of all episodes on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Just search for Timing Research and subscribe there. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and today I have arranged for Mark Sachs, John Thomas, and Norm Hallett to join us. So Norm is moderating again, and I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Thank you. I'm just giving you the Pelosi clap. Thanks, David, for having me moderate today. And we've got a great show tonight lined up. A good friend of mine, John Thomas, who we've known each other for quite a while, is going to wind up being the stability around here, I think, as much as a mad hedge trader can be stable. And Mark Sachs, who's probably one of the hottest traders around recently, it's either because he's done a lot of things right or he's spending a lot of money advertising, but I think it's the former from what I understand. So I'm really interested in hearing what Mark has to say. Stability with John, a little new stuff, at least new to me in his recent exposure with Mark, and of course me, who concentrates a lot on the mental and emotional issues, although I've been getting into simple trading plans lately. But I'm going to have everybody first start by introducing themselves. I'm going to start with you, John. John, mad hedge fund trader. Is it because you're angry all the time or you're out of your mind? Which one is it?
Well, it depends. When I initially proposed trades, people say you got to be out of your mind to do this. It was trades like, you know, buy oil at $10 a barrel, or, you know, buy Tesla at 16, things like that. And they have a nasty habit of working out. But when I initially propose a trade, people always tell me I'm out of my mind.
So how about buying Tesla at 180 last week? How is that? That's pretty good. I heard you.
Well, it's, you know, the Tesla was getting down to takeover levels. You know, I think 150, 125, someone takes a run for the whole company. So therefore, how risky is a 140, 150 call spread that expires in June? So that's what we look for, is very high return, low risk situations, which you can go in and out of on a monthly basis. And it's worked pretty well. We've averaged, you know, 34% over the last 12 years. And most people will take that.
Yeah, listen, that's excellent. That's why you're a stable guy here. Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself and why I'm seeing you all around the place, what I'm hearing a lot about you.
Well, I have a background in math, and what I really focused on in my undergraduate work was the optimization of closed systems via search engine optimization. And that's really what our system is predicated on. All of our indicators look at multi-time frames in order to create their assessment. And we really do mathematical modeling based on the premise that each individual financial instrument is a closed system and works exactly like any closed system does in physics or math. And there's certain independent variables that create a force which brings pressure, which creates pressure on price and moves it in one direction or another. We look at specifically at order flow. We look at a multi-time frame assessment of momentum, and then we've created a really, really unique neural net. And just to give you a quick example, like on the NASDAQ this morning, I took 5 trades and 5 winners, because our neural net always tells us the direction of the Dow, the Russell, and the E-mini. So I'm only going to take a long trade on the NQ when I'm trading in the direction of the market that correlate with it in direction. So it's a way of assessing money flow.
Gotcha. You know, the name of your company sounds like a railroad and monopoly. Where did you get the right line trading from?
Well, basically, you know, our system always keeps you on the right side of the trade. We never counter trend trade. We always trade in the direction of money flow. And so, you know, basically, I got the name from just, you know, thinking, well, you know, you want to stay on the right side of money flow and in the correct direction of the trend. And that's how we got right line trading.
All right, so you're a money flow guy. Okay. Could have said that harder for no, I'm just kidding you, Mark. It's a good explanation. Hey, I graduated in math myself, not because I wanted to, but because I tried engineering and couldn't get to easily through mechanics.
Get the pieces to fit together.
they didn't fit together. I couldn't get through mechanics. Every bridge I built collapsed, and finally it took me twice to get a C, and I wasn't used to getting C, so I gathered up all of my credits and graduated in math. So
don't tell me we have three math majors today, because I was a math major.
John, you're a math major too.
Yeah, I worked for the Defense Department. They wanted me to increase their yield, except in those days yield was millions killed.
I see. Well, I'm glad you're here with us instead of doing that. All right. Well, I want to hear just a quick one or two sentences, because the next question I'm going to ask you to elaborate what you believe is going to go on in the market this week. And when I say this week, I mean from Monday through Friday. Now, we asked the crowd, David's crowd. There were 41 respondents this week, which actually a few over the limit. I talked about this last week, where we seem to be getting more responders than the average lately. There seems to be a lot of interest in the market as I guess the volatility has been generating. And but whatever the case, last week the crowd felt that the market was going to go down. It was in the 70 percentile, although David's work with timing research takes that kind of a high figure, goes contra to that, and actually was in the 73 percentile, felt it was going higher. So David had it right last week. The crowd didn't. And our crowd, we all guessed it was going down also when it went up. So it's not an easy thing to figure out where the market's going to go week to week, let alone day to day and so on. So so let me know. Let's start with you, Mark. Where do you think the market is going to go between today and Friday, and what is your how certain are you of it? What percentage you're very sure? You know, maybe you're going to say 80-90%. You feel that's pretty high, but give me the direction you feel and your percentage of surety.
Okay. Well, can you see my chart?
Yeah.
That's my chart of the E-mini, and on the right edge, the fact that there's no colored background bias means that there's no alignment of time frames. We look at three time frames. Green is a multi-time frame alignment to the upside in the E-mini. Pink is a multi-time frame alignment to the downside. And you can see how price on your trading chart pretty much obeys it. When two higher time frames are aligned to the downside, price on your trading chart's almost always going to fall. And when price on the when your two higher time frames are aligned to the upside, price is always going to go up. Right now, we don't have any alignment. So that makes that particular component of determining where we're going to move very difficult, because we have no multi-time frame alignment in trend. On the right edge, line number one is our money flow line. It's the correlative direction of the NASDAQ, the Dow, and the Russell on a multi-time frame basis. It's yellow. There's no alignment in correlative markets. And then the second two lines are a multi-time frame assessment of momentum. And we only have a little bit of green on the right edge here, but then yellow on the bottom. So really, I think we're really in a period of indecision right here. Mm-hmm. Now, based just off of the fact that we have been making consistent higher highs, consistent lower highs, and consistent higher highs, but that's been violated. And you can see we've broken below that trend line, and what we're doing is we're coming back up to it here.
So what you're saying is that we need to see a little bit more upside to get back into a positive feeling, according to.
Well, here's what we've broken it here. We're coming back to it here.
You know, for the people who just listen to in a podcast, yell out some numbers too, if you can.
Sure. And you know, that trend line is about at 2900.5. So my guess would be that it's going to hit that trend line and bounce.
Come back down.
Yeah. And what I see here is once we violated the channel, panel. We're going to come back to it, and then we're going to take a continuation to the downside. I would say 60%, we're going to move to the downside this week.
You're okay, saying this is a counter-trend rally.
I'm sorry?
So you're saying a little bit of uptrend. John said it's a counter-trend rally. So you're looking at a little bit of upside up to that line you've drawn. It's a trend line with a slight uptrend, and then come back down.
Correct.
So, gotcha. Well, that was the longest two sentences I think we've ever heard.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. No. Listen, Mark, you're that's the beautiful part of this. It's just to get some guys in the room here. So let's do it Mark's way here. John, what's your thoughts about the market, and why do you have thoughts like these?
I think it's a dead cat bounce, a counter trend rally. We should exhaust right around here. And just before I came on, I bought a quick spread for Tesla because the stock has rallied $35 since last week. I bought the 240, 250 vertical bear quick spread in Tesla, which expires in 9 trading days.
Hmm.
And for me to lose money, Tesla would have to go up $25 in the next 9 trading days. So I think we're looking for new lows over the summer, but we're not going to get a replay of a December crash. We might get half the December crash. And then after that, it's up to the Fed. You know, it's tough to fight the Fed. If they're now talking about 5 interest rate cuts through next year, there's not a lot of downside in stock. So best case, we go sideways. Worst case, we drop in 10.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I'm kind of afraid to.
You're going to say the same thing I just did, right?
Well, no, actually. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say the same thing, but I'm going to be, and I'm not going to, I like black. I don't like all the color that Mark likes. But I understand, I think a lot more, I've kind of made a decision with myself to read a lot more into the actual candle, the length of the candle, where it occurs and so on. I won't get into that right now, other than to say what I'm looking at here is a weekly chart of the S&P, and I'm seeing a very clear looking double top kind of a thing in one way. And then, of course, some would say, hey, it's a V bottom. Some would say it's a but to me, it could even be a head and shoulders top, of course. This last line, this last bar on Friday was an impressive bar. But it doesn't, there's a lot of impressive bars that get met the next day with another impressive bar the other way. I have learned over time that supports and resistances can be the most important area to look at as far as trying to figure out what's going to happen long term. Now, like I said, a week is a tough spot. I mean, if I had to talk about a week, and you're looking in this area, there's a lot of risk. If you go long and you believe that this would be your support area, then this support line here, then that's a lot of risk to be wrong on the upside. If you want to short the market, you're in nowhere's land here from a trade standpoint, looking at it with any kind of length to the bars, time length to the bars. But I will say that this, to me, I'm trying to keep my mind out of what's going on internationally and tariffs and so on and so forth, because if you start to do that, then you stop really looking at what the chart is trying to tell you. But, you know, until further notice, I'm looking for chances for opportunities on the downside and not really on necessarily on the upside. So that's my take of it. I'm probably in a percentage standpoint. I'll say I'm looking at 55-60% on the downside. The other alternative would be kind of creeping higher with 100-point gains in the Dow and 8 and 10-point gains in the S&P as it tries to convince people it's going up. So that would be what I would look for over the next week period of time.
By the way, I'll tell you when the summer low is going to be, and that's the second half of July, when we get a whole bunch of earnings downgrades and disappointments and downward guidance as a result of all trade wars. That's the first real look that we get at the damage being done to the real economy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've kind of had your hand in government a bit, John, too. And I say I want to stay away from the fundamentals, but I can't help but think, that Trump is just playing us here. He makes the friction and then solves the friction, and that release of the tourniquet is what's been keeping this market higher. What do you see as far as politics of all of this is concerned?
Well, Well, I covered the trade wars with Japan in the 70s and 80s, and what most people don't realize is that virtually every international trade action he's taken has been illegal. It's against the law. You can't unilaterally, you know, impose tariffs against another country unless they're dumping or something like that. And the premise for almost all of these trade actions has been national security.
Right.
So is Canada a national security threat to the United States? Japan, Europe, you know, these people are all our allies. So, and all of these countries know that if they went to court, went to the world court, they would win against the United States. So Trump creates a crisis with a trade war, knowing he would lose in court, and then cuts some sort of a deal to head off a court challenge, and then moves on to the next one. That's pretty much how he ran his businesses for his entire life.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, and all of these checks and balances take months and sometimes years to work out. In the meantime, tariffs are on and, you know, things happen. So it's a mess.
The Constitution was written assuming that all the participants would be reasonable men.
Yes.
Good luck with that. In today's day and age.
I'm reading some of, if you haven't downloaded this report, everybody out there, go ahead and download it. It's got some very interesting, some of the reasons why the respondents believed in the 67th percentile that the market was going higher here was the chart. And there's a lot of references to Elliott Wave, the B wave, wave five is real, somebody says. I don't, Mark, do you follow Elliott at all? You seem to be a math type guy. I know I do. And my guy or gal is looking for a higher week in the S&P or in the indexes based on an Elliott Wave. Do you have any knowledge of Elliott that you can share with us, Mark?
I do, actually. And I've actually studied Elliott Wave fairly intensely. But let me tell you what I think has happened to Elliott Wave. I mean, Elliott Wave is based on closed system analysis of an intrinsic waveform based on the sentiment of buyers and sellers in this closed system. But what's happened, I believe, more in the last 5 years than ever, is that the fact that institutional money has become such a large percentage of overall volume, that it takes that closed system, which if you look at it in physics, is a fairly stable system. And all of a sudden, there's this tremendous injection of money, or in physics, it would be energy. So that five-wave intrinsic pattern is disrupted. And I don't think that Elliott Wave, I mean, because Elliott Wave, if you read between the lines, is based on this assumption that the power of every buyer is approximately equal to the power of every seller. And that's the same thing with Japanese candlestick patterns. 400 years ago, that was true. But now, because the power of every buyer is equal to the power of every seller until institutional money intervenes and destroys everything, I think candlestick patterns, Elliott Wave, GAN theory, these things have been pretty much demolished by institutional money.
I would agree with that totally. And don't forget the impact of algorithms.
I'm sorry?
Don't forget the impact of algorithms.
Right. Well, it's pretty much the same thing. Algorithms, big banks, institutional money. I mean, they just completely disrupt that intrinsic waveform. And just follow up with what you said about options. Like, we have an options portfolio, and we just closed our fourth profitable position on, I call it drunken donuts. Most people call it Dunkin' Donuts. But we're moving now to the short side. I'm going to start rolling our options portfolio. We still have some long positions. Like I have DuPont long on a call spread. I have, I can tell you right now, I have Avago on a call spread, which I'm a little bit concerned about. But I'm going to start looking to the downside on bear spreads moving into the future.
Yeah, look at the Russell 2000. It's almost always the best performer on the downside.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, Mark, I've been fascinated with Elliott lately, and I think it's because I've been trading. I'm more of a futures trader than anything else, and I understand, Mark, that you do a lot of futures trading.
Right.
John does a bit of it too. But I've noticed that Elliott seems to have much more accuracy in the currencies than it does in some of the other areas. And I'm wondering whether it's because there's plenty of big money anyway trading currencies besides the big money that you talk about. Have you noticed that as far as currencies are concerned?
I really haven't, but it sort of makes sense because currencies sort of take a bias, and I think institutional money sort of comes and goes on the currencies over days to weeks rather than minutes like it does on the NASDAQ, the Dow, Russell. And I would think that Elliott Wave would have a lot more validity remaining in the currencies. Mm-hmm. But I would still be concerned, though, because I do believe that when Elliott created Elliott Wave, it had a lot of validity. Like, I believe that when George Lane created divergence signals on his oscillator in 1957, trading divergence was very, very powerful. Mm-hmm. But institutional money has changed the whole trading paradigm. Mm. So we have to kind of shift. This is why we put so much stock in momentum, which is really just price acceleration and money flow and the multi-time frame alignment of trend. That's really all proxies for big money.
Yeah. And here I thought it was Elliott Gould that was making all those different Elliott. All right. Well, that was for all you Forex traders out there and people who trade currency. I know there's a lot of people who listen to this cast. But let's get to the magic question of the day. What types of trading do you specialize in, John, or do you focus on? And how did you come to that decision?
I do global long short macro. In other words, we look at all asset classes around the world, including stocks and bonds. And we create option situations. Where the risk of losing money is far smaller than the possibility of making money. And the options really are the only way where the individual investor can trade like a professional or gain an unfair advantage. You can create trades where, the chances of winning over losing are 10 to 1 or 5 to 1 or 3 to 1. And if you just keep hammering away with this strategy, you will make pretty decent money over time. Like I said, our audit return over time is 33% for the last 12 years. And anybody can do that. This isn't rocket science. Just requires some basic instructions on what options are. And it's our job to show you which industries and which companies to focus on.
I mean, a lot of new people out there are new listeners. All they know about options is buying puts and buying calls. And
that's a guaranteed way to lose money.
That's right. And
the time decay will eat you to death. What you want to do is buy one call and sell short the other, so you neutralize the effects of time decay and volatility. Mm-hmm. Something like 80% of all options expire unexercised. So inherently, only option put and call buying is a loser's game. But if you come up with combinations of longs and shorts, puts and calls, then you can turn the guaranteed losers into guaranteed winners. And that is, in fact, how a lot of professional traders actually earn their bread and butter on a daily basis.
Right, they're taking the stuff out of the middle of selling options in order to gain some of that money back in order to buy other things, and you're pitting one against the other.
The other thing I've noticed over 50 years of doing this is that your typical beginner trader is looking for the home run. They want to buy an option that goes up in value 10 times, and that happens about as often as a lottery ticket delivering a $100 million prize. The actual money is made hitting singles, hitting. You can make a lot more money hitting 100 singles than you can a couple of home runs. And that is where, again, most professionals make their money, making 10% a month, 15% a month on a single position and so on, and just piling up hundreds of those.
Interesting. 80% or 82% of options expire worth. It's like American men, most expire, 80% expire without ever being exercised.
Boy, how you made the connection there?
Because I'm kind of an exercise freak.
My job is to make my options expire worth a lot of money, and your options or the other guy's options expire worthless.
Yeah, that's right.
That is the goal. The option I sold you is going to expire worthless. The one I'm keeping is deep in the money.
Well, I've talked to you before about this, but I ran when all there was buying puts and buying calls, I ran one of the largest option firms that did that, and we were know, giving people opportunity. That's how we justified it in our heads.
Yeah.
And what we were doing really was giving people opportunity, but a very rare one. And the problem was when the firm first opened and was in, maybe you remember this, Mark, I don't know how old you are, but I guess it was 1979, late 79, I started with that firm. I think the first, I sat down as a broker and sold a bunch of silver and gold calls, you know, 2-3 weeks later. By January, I think it was, you know, that's when gold hit 800 and the Hunt brothers drove people to $50 silver, and people were, anyway, put $10,000 and they had $160,000 in 5 weeks. This is the bane that you're talking about. You get, and not only do you wish for the home run, the worst thing is if you get the home run, then you're swinging for it all the time and thinking,
yeah, that's it's amazing what delusions you can convince yourself of when your paycheck depends on it.
Yeah. All right, Mark, save me. What is your, you know, you specialize, I thought it was in the futures area, but I may be wrong. And how did you come about your specialty?
Well, basically through, you know, in my graduate work, my thesis was on, I worked with the U.S. Navy developing underwater decompression schedules using the optimization of closed systems. And I started trading in 2004 just on my own. And I began to see that most of the stuff out there was just a mess. It was broken. Nobody, you know, it didn't really work. So what I started to do was to create software based on that principle that the market was a closed system. There were certain defined forces that move price. And there was a multivariable equation that would optimize, would define how price was going to move out into the future. Like last month, we made $6,000, actually $5,750 to be exact, for the month of May on a $5,000 portfolio. We made over 100%. I traded right under 80%. This is all off of NinjaTrader, my back end. And I pretty much every day trade the NASDAQ and I trade crude oil. Mm-hmm. Today I had 5 trades on the NQ and I had 5 winners. Mm-hmm. And I did really well. I also do options and I use the same software I use to day trade. I use it to swing trade. And I've been pretty successful trading options. So that's really, you know, how it came about. But I really agree with John that the way to look at the market is that no single financial instrument moves in isolation. It's a global market. Everything is linked. Really what's going on is big money, like the institutional money is being rotated from asset class to asset class. And if we can track that rotation of money, we really can optimize our chances for getting a winner.
I mean, it's nice to hear about all those winners, but when you do have that event, that launch every once in a while, how do you keep your losses in check? What's your technique to do that?
Well, I can tell you, on Wednesday, I opened up with 3 winners in a row, and like an idiot, I didn't stop. I traded a 4th and I lost. I traded a 5th and I lost. And I was down $1,200. And remember, we're trading a $5,000 portfolio.
Yeah, that's...
But really, what I do is I don't lose my mind. I just, you know, take Prozac and a couple of Xanax. And then I just stay focused. And I traded back down and closed with a $400 loss. It took me a lot of trades to do it. And I ran up a lot of commissions and was one of the worst days I've had in a long time. Mm-hmm. But I just really have a lot of faith in the signals. Mm-hmm. And because everywhere, you know, I have 175 people in my trading room. Everyone always says to me, why don't you set a stop limit on your losses? And the reason I say I don't is I always feel that eventually the market will start coming to me and I'll trade out of the hole. Although I still finished down, I didn't finish buried. Mm. So I have difficult days, believe me. I just, you know, with my medication and not losing, not chasing the market, not revenge trading, just waiting for the market to come. It does. Mm-hmm. And I'll just tell you one thing that I think that's really important. Like John emphasized how important it is for traders to just go for singles, repetitive singles. And that's how you wind up making really good money. He's 100% right. I mean, I always emphasize that my goal in day trading is not to get winners. It's to avoid taking losers. Mm-hmm. So our mindset is, I don't care if we miss five huge trades. If we can avoid two losers at the same time, we're way ahead of the game. So I'm looking for a trade to come to me that meets all the parameters I want, that I consider to be ultra low risk. And if in the meantime, I have to let winners go past me, and I sidestep 90% of the losers, I know I'm going to make money.
Well, anybody that's versed in math and has that burned in their head that if you lose 50%, you got to double your money, you know, from there. So we all know that if you can defend against the losses, especially the gut punch losses, the 15, 10, 15, 20% losses that you take without using stops, that just takes the trust out of your system. And I think that's really part of what I just took from all you that you've just said, Mark, that you need to trust your system. And I think that's really where it all starts. And that can only be done by understanding how the system was developed, knowing that the system matches you, who you are. In other words, this is why I could be trading a great system, give it to you, and somehow you can't make any money with it. It's got to fit you. And so for me, in answering that same question, I started out in the option business, and I just saw how tough it was, first of all, to explain to the retail trader what an option is and how it works, let alone starting with the butterfly spreads people just get lost unless you want to manage their money. Generally, if you put them out on their own, they wind up buying puts and buying calls. And at the same time, I've always had a fascination for the leveraged nature of the futures market, because this is where I spend most of my time, because futures is something that now, especially now where it trades almost 24 hours, 22 and a half hours, 23, it depends on the market you look at, almost all night, very, very little risk of waking up in the morning, having a gap, some horrible distance against you. So I think there's some control in futures trading, even though people look at it as a highly risked way of doing business. I see it as the other way. I think if you can look at the right setups, and I may show you one in our next question, I think you've got a plan, and you want to see that plan roll out in the market before you get heavy with a trade. But I think that it's the leverage area and the idea that actually defending yourself in the futures market is a much easier thing to do than in other markets that don't trade 24 hours. All right.
I agree with you, and I just want to add one quick thing. Mm-hmm. In my mentorship class, the first thing I do is ask I define for traders the formula: sensitivity over specificity times prevalence equals positive predictive value. And if you understand that formula, you understand not only how to day trade, swing trade, and long term trade. And you really have to take that formula to heart. And you have to know, I mean, that's really it. That formula defines your trade methodology.
No, I hear you. I talk a lot when I'm with traders about maintaining a positive expectation, which means that you have to believe that what you're doing is going to result in something positive for you. And if not, you've already included the defense postures, and that you go into it with full commitment that, that you've done all that you can, and now let's take the risk that you designed to risk, an intelligent risk. So that, and because people hear positive expectation, they think, oh, you're just wishing that the market's going to happen. That's not what I mean. I mean, it's making a plan and following that plan. It's just amazing to me. That's not so amazing. There's a lot of things affecting us in the outside world and in the inside world, jumping off our plan and rethinking things right in the middle of things. So trading is not an easy vocation, but once you have taken your pain, made your mistakes and corrected them to the point where you're making so few of them that your equity is going up, it can be quite a terrific thing to be doing. So This is the part of the show where we want to talk about any anything you see out there that you'd like people to pay attention to, some opportunities that you think people may want to pay attention to over this week. What do you have, John? Do you have anything you've been looking at?
Being that we expect weakness to go on for the next couple of months, I would use every opportunity to pick up big cap tech in a sell-off. Mm-hmm. The antitrust concerns are way overblown. It's not going to happen. Keep in mind that, you know, the government may change over in 18 months, and it takes anywhere from 5 to 10 years to pursue an antitrust case against any of these big guys. So I would go with the FANGs. I would go with anything crap cloud related. If you're a daily trader in front of your screens all day long, I would be using rallies to go short, but only on a 1 month view. Mm-hmm. You're looking for short-term shorts to pick up now, long-term longs in big tech to pick up after some sort of meltdown. You know, if you can get Microsoft anywhere under 115, you know, Apple around 170, you'll get a multi-bagger return out of those over the next few years. Hmm. And bonds, you want to buy the dips. I'm sorry, but trend is your friend. Don't fight the Fed. You want to be buying the bond market. If you have any bonds in your portfolio, keep them. Mm-hmm. They're going higher. You not only get the positive cash flow from the coupon payments, but you also get capital appreciation.
Yeah, one of my indicators is that I'm getting a lot of mortgage companies calling me, asking me to refi. They want to do it at the higher rate. So,
I got offered 3.8 on a 30-year by my own bank.
Somebody just offered me a 3.0 on adjustable where it will not move for the first 7 years.
And I would take that all day long.
That's amazing.
Yeah, if you're financing your house anywhere under 3%, you're at the long-term inflation rate, which means you get to keep the house for free.
Yeah, well, it's just what happens. Yeah, on that eighth year.
The money is free.
Well, it's that eighth year that I kind of get worried. But, and I'm at that point in my current mortgage where I'm starting to pay more principal than I am, interest. Mark, what do you got any thoughts out there? Something to propel the reputation of...
Well, I'll tell you what I like, and I'll tell you one of the things I do use to trade options is I use a really simple data feed called Benzinga. It's really pretty inexpensive. It shows you all the call and put positions, all the big ones that cross every day. I filter them for size. You know, I look for positions that are much greater than open interest. And, you know, at the end of every night, I just kind of take a look and see where big money is going. And it's really helped me out a lot. And what I see big money going into right now is, if you hang on 1 second, I have, let me bring up my little list here. I see, I'm looking to take a position in the junior gold miners, which I think is a good long-term hold. I see a lot of financial instability with all through the summer with Trump, the tariffs, all the stuff. I think the junior gold miners is a good bet. I like, I see a lot, there's a lot of call action on Pan American Silver. Huge call options are being purchased on that. Mm-hmm. And also, I see a lot of call activity being purchased on the Pro Shares Ultra Short Qs. So there's a lot of big money going short on the Qs. So, again, it's hard to fight big money. And if I had to make a recommendation, those would be my three: long silver, long gold, and short the Qs.
I mean, how long can big money forever support their positions? When do they give up?
I think it's the big money that actually sets the trend.
I see.
I mean, if big money is betting that the Qs are going to go down, at some point they're going to step in and they're going to sell the Qs. And it's the same thing with silver and gold. It's that sector rotation of those enormous amounts of money that really set the direction of these financial instruments. All we're kind of doing is looking at the footprints, their mm-hmm. footprints, and the Pro Shares Short Qs, huge. Pan American Silver, huge.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of sniffing in their direction, honestly, in those.
So listen, having been a former subscriber to Harry Brown, making recipes, I think.
There's a name up house.
But, I'm always looking, I always got an eye on the metals. My they're looking, the Elliott guys are looking for a little bit of weakness before the strength. But this is the kind of action that we're seeing recently. It hovered around that 306 level of gold for a while, and now it's blasted above it again. It does look good. And that silver's move today was up 30 cents when we started this talk today. These are big moves. 30 cents is a nice move from silver, and so I'm going to have my eye on that. I've got up here a chart of the Japanese yen, which is a market that I've been looking at for several weeks. If you look at I've got this what I consider a very very important support resistance line, where it literally saw this level on the way up and bounced back down a couple of times before breaking through it recently. What I like to see in these kinds of moves is it's either going to keep going, but the better action and the safer trade is to see it test that former resistance, which is now support, and then have it break over this line. And for more aggressive traders, some reasonable candle above this support, breaking up from the support, may be a place to trickle on a position or two if you trade multiple positions. But this is the point, taking out this recent high, to me looks like a good trade that has a very good chance of happening. We've been moving really counter, it's been really moving with interest rates, and there are reasons why, of course, which I won't go into now, but John's feeling of higher bond rates should be friendly to what I'm looking at here, the Japanese yen. So I'm being patient. Actually, I do have one position on this initial breakout because I'm trading a multiple position. And I'm holding on to that position right here. It's a very small position, just waiting for a chance to add and really see what I believe should happen from a technical standpoint actually happen. This is the kind of thing that makes me confident in analysis and positions, and keeps me as a positive expectant trader. So I wanted to show you this Japanese yen trade because I think it may have some quality to it. But we'll know soon enough. All right, well, we've got about just a few minutes left, and I thought that we'd give everybody a chance to end early today.
Can I just throw in one trade?
This is the time where just say what you'd like to say before. Just give people a little something before we end it.
Okay, because I think this is a trade that everyone can still get, and it's one of my favorite trades that I have going right now. It's on Albemarle. The ticker's ALB. It's already up a lot, but I still think it's got a long way to go. I have the January 15, 2021, $75 call. It's already up to $71. But Albemarle, I have been following that stock for years. It's the world's leading producer of zinc, which goes into all these high capacity batteries. And Peru put a cap on the amount of zinc that they could mine, which took that stock and crushed. And I think that it's a $100+ stock. It is coming back like a rocket. I bought it when it was in the low to mid-60s. It's already at 71. I think it's got upside potential to 100. The $75 call is now, I think, it's approaching $10.
What's the expiration mark on the call?
I set the expiration January 15, 2021. I think over the course of the next year and a half, Albemarle is going to go to 100 or more. I think it's a very low risk, but potentially very high reward trade with very, very little downside. I mean, Albemarle is already trading almost at its 52-week lows. It's off of them, but it's way down.
Yeah, you should learn to put some enthusiasm behind your suggestion.
Listen, every other trade I recommend, you worry.
But yeah, I hear you. No, I hear you.
But Albemarle, I just happen to think. I mean, I think it's a very tough trade to lose.
I think I dated somebody named Albemarle.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure. Any last thoughts, John? Saving it for the last?
Just go to our website, www.madhedgefundtrader.com. You can sign up for free research there. We cover stocks, bonds, commodities, precious metals, energy, and real estate. I've been in the business for 50 years. Looking forward to 50 more. Trading is my lifeblood. And I'm also about to embark on a round-the-world trip where we'll be hosting 12 strategy luncheons around the world in 12 different countries.
Wow.
So if you're looking for good investment in Cairo or New Delhi, I'm your guy. Just go to madhedgefundtrader.com and sign up for the lunches.
Mark and I love Delhi. Don't you, Mark?
Yeah, of course.
We love Delhi. Any Nova?
You're so funny.
Mark, tell us a little bit about your firm and so on, where people can kind of connect with you if they have to.
Sure. Just go to www.rightlinetrading.com. This week, we're running a special. You can come in for a buck and you can watch me trade for a week. Every morning, you can trade with me. And, my mantra is, if you come in for a week, you're going to stay for a lifetime. So if you want to risk a buck, just go to our website or give us a call at 786-732-4656. It's on the website. Pay a dollar and come on in and make some loot.
And in New Jersey, call Colette.
That's right.
I don't know where I heard that. Are you in the Northeast, Mark?
Yeah, I'm in Miami, Florida.
Oh, you're right down a block from me. I'm in Parkland.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm in Pinecrest.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah. Well, if you want to find me, you probably know where to get me at thedisciplinedtrader.com. Take a look at Simple Trading Plans is something we're revamping and putting together. Revamping means that we're making it more modern looking. It's operated very well in its older look for the last 4 or 5 years, but I think it needs a refresh. We're about to come out with a new Simple Trading Plan. I believe simplicity is where it's at. If you're going to spend a lot of time being heavy on an area, it's defending, as Mark said and John has alluded to many times. You don't want to take the big loss. You want to defend against the losses and let the gains be what they're going to be. So if you can go over to thedisciplinedtrader.com, look around, opt in for anything, and you'll be on my list so that you'll get my thoughts and etc. And of course, simple trading plans is something that if you don't have a plan that you have confidence in, it's good to start off with something simple that you may add to, but you don't have to. And we've got 3 plans available right now online that we sell as a bundle. And we're working on something called Loaded Gun that we've already done some work with 20 traders that have been trading with that system and just keep giving me more and more great input on it. So that's the wrap for today. I want to thank everybody for being here. John, always a pleasure. Mark, really nice meeting you.
Same here.
Who is this?
You mean the picture?
Yeah.
Oh, that's my son. I didn't know he was projecting him.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a young Mark.
Yeah, no. He does look like me, but that's him. We were playing paintball.
Yeah.
So he's in his mask.
Okay, David, you still with us? Did you take a nap?
No, I've been watching, doing all my behind the scenes stuff here for the show. So yeah, lots of great info today. So thank you for the discussion. And just a quick reminder for everyone: be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast directory. You can also go to timingresearch.com to get access to any of the past reports or the show archives. The next episode of Analyze Your Trade will be tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. It'll be episode number 81 with Marina Villatoro, Brian Klindworth, and Jim Kenny. And I just want to thank my guests again for today. Mark Sachs of RightLineTrading.com, John Thomas of MadHedgeFundTrader.com, and Norm Hallett of TheDisciplinedTrader.com. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.